We'd like to begin with asking by telling you what was requested of us to begin a concert in Williamsburg, Virginia. About a month and a half ago, we were playing there. As you know, that's the home of the Village, where they have, they kind of recreate colonial times, and it's a very patriotic place. They also have the naval base there, and so many of the residents are associated with the troops that are fighting overseas right now. And so we were performing the concert there, and they asked us to begin the concert with this piece, which is a little bit unusual for a string quartet concert, but I think you'll see why in just a moment. That music had assumed a very different meaning for me than it would have had, say, in the middle of the summer. And I think for all of us, the idea that this music has greater meaning and greater resonance because of the situation in which it's played. So when you think about what does that music actually mean, there are a number of different levels on which you can discuss that question. You can say, well, it has a beautiful melody, it's hummable. It comes in sections, it comes in phrases that kind of go along with the poetry. But then there's the whole issue of what do you bring to the music? What connections do you have? What images do you have? I think all of us now, I was watching the news this morning, it's the third anniversary of the whole World Trade Center bombing, and they were playing endlessly, you know, all of those clips and things like that. And whenever you hear that music now, I think those kinds of images come flooding to your mind. And so the whole idea of what music means, you can see from that illustration, this illustration, that it's actually a very complex question. And so that brings us to the music of Beethoven, which is the reason why we're all gathered here this afternoon. And the whole question is, why do you study Beethoven's music? What meaning and what relevance does Beethoven's music have for us today? Because that's really the question that you have to address, I think. If the music has no meaning, has no relevance, then there's probably no reason to study it. You don't save old things just for the purpose of saving old things, but you save old things that in some way capture something that has to do with everyday life. And that's really an important question for us as classical musicians as well. And so we'd like to discuss this afternoon several ways in which Beethoven's music has enduring meaning. Or the way I like to think about it, maybe three ways this afternoon we're going to talk about where Beethoven was able to balance perhaps better than any single person has had before him or since in musical terms of what he was able to accomplish in his music. And the first of them is probably the most obvious. I think all of us listen to music for one simple reason, because of the way it makes us feel, right? You come home after a hard day studying and you flip on the stereo because you want to have some music to change the mood that you're in, you know, if you're down, if you're up, whatever. You know, we use music as, in a sense, a tool to modify our mood. You can think about how powerful that is anytime you watch a movie or watch a television show. Any emotional scene, if you think about it, would not be nearly as emotional without the soundtrack. Try it sometimes. Get your favorite video, watch the scene, you know, turn off the music, and it's really kind of flat. There's no emotional resonance. And so we know that for some mysterious reason, music has the power to affect us emotionally. It's very bizarre when you think about it. They're just frequencies in the air, but somehow vibration affects our mood. And Beethoven was able to exploit that and to use that in a fantastic way. In his very first string quartet, in the moment that he said that he was inspired inspired by the two scenes of Romeo and Juliet. Now, I don't know how familiar you guys are with that, but you can imagine, remember if you will, the story where Romeo and Juliet are star-crossed lovers and they commit suicide because they sense that they're not going to be able to be together. It's all a huge tragedy, but Beethoven, as a relatively young man, was so sort of moved by that, engrossed by that, that he wanted to capture that feeling, that moment in sound. And I think that, again, his strength is that he's really able to do that. I want you to listen to a couple of things as he plays. First of all, the way he's able to capture the mood, but also the way he's able to transform the mood. He's able to move it from sort of reflective sadness to great agitation to incredible tragedy and turmoil. In fact, at the climax of this section of music that we'll play for you, the moments of greatest tension are actually the moments of silence. It's a fantastic imaginative accomplishment for Beethoven to be able to use not only music and sound, but the absence of sound for expression. It's really wonderful. So this is the slow moving of Beethoven number one. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's just the first part, and it goes on from there. But he's able to really express not only, I think, happiness in just sort of a pleasant way, like pleasantly happy, but a tremendous joy and conviction, which in a sense is even deeper and stronger than just sort of like, oh, it's in the space. Wonderful way to be able to express that.
So again, apologies for stopping sort of midstream there, but you can hear more of it tonight. Just before we leave this topic, I just want to mention to you two things that I find that really make me excited to play this music and why I would spend my life doing it. Number one is, you'll notice we're playing acoustic instruments. Any of you who have tried one know that every nuance of fret or bow stroke or anything you do with your hand results in some nuance of the sound as well. So it allows for this great range of emotional expression that Tim is talking about. The other thing that I really find satisfying about this music is that it doesn't have words. So therefore, the emotional nuance that you see in the music, that I feel in the music when I play it, changes from day to day. Because there aren't words that depict exactly what the feeling is to be had. And there's something quite magical, Tim pointed out, about just the idea of sound and the way that the sound is created, communicating some form of emotion, human connection. We'd like to move now to another way, I think, that Beethoven creates great meaning in his music, and enduring meaning, as Tim said. Naturally, probably as you've studied, Beethoven worked really hard to write his pieces. If you ever get a chance to see a manuscript of his that he wrote, you'll see he scratched out. He made so many rough drafts. He almost had a tortured way of writing, and it's funny, you can almost see actually the emotion when he's writing, because you can see really dark pencil lines in his music, scratching things out or erasing things, or writing things in. So it meant a great deal to him, and he put a lot of thought into how his music was put together. So there's an intellectual or a planned component of music. So, and I want to show you a little bit of how that works. We're going to go back now to the first quartet that he published, the one that had the Romeo and Juliet section. We're going to look at a different section of the music and look at how it's put together, because I think it's fascinating how well conceived it is. Now, sometimes when you think of a piece of music, you think, okay, what's the first thing you got to write? You got to write a beautiful melody, right? And I'll figure out how to make some accompaniment that goes along with it. Well, Beethoven's idea of a beautiful melody is maybe not what we would think of. Here's what his beautiful melody of this movement is. Now, to me, that sounds like a little scrap. That's like something you do when you're warming up, just goofing off. But to Beethoven, this was a musical kernel to be dealt with. And what Beethoven does in the course of this movement, which I'll try to explain in a little bit of Reader's Digest fashion, is he takes that little kernel of music, which on the surface sounds like nothing, and he repeats it about 160, 170 times. And rather than it seeming boring, rather we see this kernel develop into this big 6-minute piece of music. So let's look at it in a little bit more detail. First of all, Tim, could you repeat that for us? Let's hear it again. So two things that I want to point your attention to right away. It's got a very characteristic rhythm. Da, 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 da. Da, 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 da. And remember that, because that'll be sort of your little way to recognize this idea whenever it happens. And then the other thing is it's got a sort of an interval to it. Da, da. Right? And it's the upper note, da, is sort of decorated. Da, 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 da. Like with little notes above and below. Da, 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 da. And then the lower note. Da. Let's do it one more time. Okay? Sort of got in your head and in your ear. Okay, so what Beethoven does immediately after hearing this little bit of music, can you play it one more time, Tim? And then add the second bit of music. So what he did, what he does is he takes that same little idea and just changes the last note. Instead of da 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 da. Right? Can we hear it one more time? So already he's having us listen to that little kernel of music in a new way. It's just one note change, but it's already giving it a freshness. And then after that, Tim? Huh? much higher. In a higher octave, and it's got a big, long, melodic tail. Maybe that's a bit of that melody we're looking for. Can we hear it all at once, Joe? First tremolo, second black note, and now? It's a big, long, melodic tail. And let's hear what that sounds like with all of us helping, too. Okay, I would suggest that you can even think of that little musical idea as the main character of a fly. And you're going to watch the main character sort of change clothing, change surroundings, have different adventures in the course of this piece. So already we've seen three versions of that little main character. Now, I'm going to skip around to a few other sides so you can hear how Beethoven deals with it. We're not going to do all 170 verses of it. Don't worry. But let's skip over to one where Janet, on the second violin, gets to play. And now notice that when you hear the da 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 idea, the last note now has a very sort of unpleasant chord that happens on the end, something that's unsettling. And so what started off as just a neutral little idea, da-da-da-da-da, is now taking on different emotional meanings. The other thing you'll notice is that when Janet says it, okay, you listen for the different moods, and especially on that last chord, also listen for Tim to echo Janet. So it's as though Beethoven is having a bit of a conversation with this idea. So we do one song? First it was Tim. Yeah. Great, and I'll skip over to one where it happens in the viola, in Phil's part. This time now, listen to the back row, the way this character is seen, because now the other three of us will hold these long, drawn out, beautiful, warm sounding chords, and now suddenly it's a much more peaceful and comfortable version of the little idea. Finally, let's do one other. This time I'll start it, but it's going to be handled Beethoven's sextet so that we do it conversationally. Each one of us will do it at a different time, but you'll hear the emotional level is very heated. To me, it almost sounds like we're arguing. I hope that we're going to now play the whole piece for you so you can follow it. And don't worry if you don't hear all 170 times. I don't hear them either. Do notice that Beethoven is able to take what to us seems like a very musically insignificant idea and create an entire long 6-minute musical structure. If I did it, it would be boring. 170 times, the same thing. I'd run out of ideas. But for Beethoven, it's just an opportunity to demonstrate his incredible creativity and compositional creativity. The other really important facet to writing music this way, I think that that helps Beethoven is it makes the music much more organic. It's the same sort of thinking that like if you have some consistent feature that goes through a book, that main character, you know, you can always tell when a movie wanders, right? Because it gets too far away from the main plot. This helps Beethoven stay right on the main plot. And even the times when he's not using that little idea, da 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 da. It makes me wonder when the next version of it is going to happen. I actually personally think Beethoven would have made a wonderful movie director because he had a great sense of plot development. And I think this is how it happens in his music, by writing this book. So we'll now do the whole movement. This is the first movement of his first published book. Thank you. this afternoon with you all about the meaning of music. And in a way, that's an impossible question to answer. What is the meaning of music? It's like answering what is the meaning of life. And in fact, there are books and books written precisely on the topic of what is the meaning of music. But I think what we'd like to suggest to you, rather than try to answer the question with any sort of finality or authority, but at least suggest to you that music's meaning occurs on many, many levels, and that Beethoven is a great composer, and in fact, we often consider him to be the greatest composer in classical music because his music addresses all of these levels, and his music doesn't insult us as human beings. In fact, in a way, it says that we're smart, we're emotional. It addresses us as human beings on all our many levels of complexity, and I think that's one reason why Beethoven is so great. I'd like to suggest one other level this afternoon, and also to suggest that there are many other levels that I hope that you all explore in whatever kind of music you choose to listen to. I think all of the greatest music will have some substance and will have something to say on all of these levels, and if it doesn't, that's why after two or three listenings you may get tired or bored of some kind of music, because I think that it doesn't address all of these levels of our humanity like Beethoven's music does. But the one level that I'd like to speak on now is the whole idea of music and spirituality, the spiritual nature of music. This, again, is a difficult thing to put into words. In fact, it's probably the most difficult aspect of music to put into words. More easy to talk about music as emotion. Music can either be joyful, or music can convey great tragedy. It's also possible to talk about music in terms of its intricate construction, the quality in which the music and the thought behind how the music is actually put together, and hopefully Dave gave you some insight that Beethoven was an unbelievable craftsman when it comes to putting together music. But this whole idea of music and spiritual nature of music, it's hard to describe how music has a spiritual nature, but again, the evidence is there. It's all through history. And in fact, there was a wonderful article in just last Sunday's New York Times that talked about the power of music. It shows a contemporary example of the fact that we're all so appalled that the Taliban in Afghanistan outlawed listening to all kinds of music. They weren't allowed to turn on the radio. They say, well, how awful, how tyrannical, how fascist. And in fact, the interesting thing about that article is that it pointed out that a number of institutions, not just the Taliban, the old Afghanistan government, they not only realized the great power of music and realized that it's something that needed to be controlled, they obviously chose a rather extreme way to control it and probably a wrong way to control it. But throughout history, the Christian Church, for example, this article was wonderful in explaining how the Christian Church recognized the power of music, and of course they wanted it, obviously, to glorify God, but they had lots of teachings and regulations surrounding music, and in fact, the church historically has been, especially for classical music, has been one of the real guardians and patrons of music, realizing that music can have a great deal to do with our spiritual development. Now, let's turn back to Beethoven. I think a couple of reasons why Beethoven, in particular, has the spiritual quality, spiritual dimension to his music. The first is that, and perhaps you studied this in your unit on Beethoven, at a certain point Beethoven realized he was going deaf. And as a composer and a musician, it's probably the most devastating faculty to be taken away from him. And at a certain point when he was not very old, I think he was in his late 20s, he wrote a letter, and it's now called the Heiligen Testament, in which he says that losing his hearing, realizing that his hearing was inevitably going, he actually wanted to kill himself. He wanted to commit suicide. And yet it says in this letter that the only thing that kept him from taking his own life is because he
felt there was music in him that needed to be written down, needed to be shared with people of the world. And so already you begin to see that there's a really deep meaning to music. It's him. It's about him. It's about him as a person, about him as a human being. The second aspect in Beethoven's life that I think gives the music great spiritual dimension is the fact that by the end of his life, in the last 4 or 5 years of his composition in particular, he was writing pieces while being completely deaf. He was cut off from hearing any kind of sound, and yet he still created music. And in a way, though I would never wish this on a composer, in a way, it probably could be argued that Beethoven was forced to go inside of himself, to go into his imagination, to go into his spirit in a more deep and compelling way than he would have been forced to do so had he still been able to hear. Now, we began the class we're playing, America's Beautiful, and came to justice to you that along with God Bless America, the Star Spangled Banner, has achieved a great deal more of meaning to us now, post September 11th. And I would say that in a very profound way, music as one of the great arts does this because it can explore who we are as human beings. And I think that's the essence of spirituality. It's asking the big questions of who are we? What are we doing here? What's important to us? There's things like songs, I think, have so much meaning to us now because they say who we are as Americans. They talk about the ultimate values of freedom, of democracy, of bravery, of courage, of self-sacrifice. All those things, those are what we are. And I think that's what Beethoven is searching for in his music. Who am I? And so we're going to play a little bit in the time that we have left. I think we have enough time to play you a good chunk of a piece that Beethoven wrote while he was completely deaf. You guys probably know this from your unit on Beethoven. It's during what we call his late period. And his late period quartets, which he wrote 5, are what many people consider to be the greatest quartets ever written, ever. And we're going to play you a section of music from a Golden Week, one of these late quartets that I think is all about Beethoven going very deep in himself, asking these big questions of who he is. It has an amazing yearning quality, an amazing contemplative quality. This is how it's done in slow music. I think you'll hear in tonight's concert in the last piece by Beethoven how he looks at some of these answers in more triumphant music. So we definitely wanted to show you some music where he's really probing, he's really searching, it's some of the most profound and exquisite music that's ever been written. Thank you.
Thank you.